Musical compositions have often been inspired by works of fine art. Now we're going to see if works of fine art can be inspired by musical compositions. Stay tuned. Hello, I am Stephen DeLuque, and you are listening to Ears on Art, a segment of Issues and Ideas produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving Southern Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties on the central coast of California. Co-host Krissa Hewitt and I take a slight deviation from our usual format to explore an interdisciplinary experiment involving classical music and the production of art. Michael Novak, the maestro of Orchestra Novo, takes on the challenge of introducing the participants of the Grizzly Academy to produce works of art while listening to classical music. Let's let maestro Michael Novak explain this exciting collaboration.
Stephen and I are here at the home of maestro Michael Novak. Good afternoon.
Hiya, Krissa and Stephen. Thanks for coming.
Hello there.
Stephen and I have had this fascination that we keep talking about of the crossover of disciplines, that people are engaged in one thing, but then they find that something else gets really important in their life. And there are often mixes that we don't necessarily think about. I was talking with somebody last night who's an engineer who's discovered painting, and his life has changed. Michael, you are absolutely known for being about music, but when I asked you, you said that, yes, you do have quite a bit of visual activity going in your head or when you're conducting, when you're listening, and wanted to see what that is for you.
Well, that's an interesting question, really, or a thought. Sometimes it's just a feeling. When I hear music, obviously we have our body reacts to the harmonies. Lots of times it's color. If we're playing in a certain key, some keys have different colors than other keys. I know quite a few people that think in that terms, like A major is a red, or D major is blue.
Are they consistent for you?
Most of the time they are consistent. For sure, A major is red, and I think a lot of musicians will say, yeah, A major is red. But there are other types of visuals that I see when I'm listening to music. It's not necessarily like I'm seeing a forest or I'm seeing a waterfall, but I'm just traveling in some kind of landscape of sound that carries me physically with the harmonies, but also gives me something very visual to see inside my brain. I don't know how to completely describe it.
I wouldn't think it would be that easy to describe. When you're conducting, assuming that most of the time you're not able to stand there with your eyes closed, what are some of the things that are really important for you to see in actuality?
In actuality, I like looking at the faces of the players. I like to look in the eyes of the players just before they're about to play a beautiful solo or come with some gorgeous line in the violins or a French horn, look right at them and like invite them to come and play. I've had the good fortune of being around some wonderful conductors that wanted you to give you your best effort. And they would do that by just smiling at you or giving you a little wink or something or come on with the hand motion, just let it go. Play for us? Yeah, I like it a lot. I enjoy looking at the players while they're playing.
When I was in junior high orchestra, that one of the things that has stuck in my mind forever was before we would begin, that conductor always had a communication with us, whether it was mouthing words, smiles, gestures. It was that pep talk. When I'm watching a conductor, I'm often regretting that I'm not on the other side seeing those invitations, as you say.
Well, and also when you're getting prepared for a piece of music, it's sort of like getting prepared for a soliloquy or some part of a play. You have to become the character of the music, not just the character of the conductor, but the character of the music. One has to get prepared physically so that it's the right motions that you're giving to the players, the right tempo. As much information with your hands, with your face, with your body, to get the point across of what you're feeling about the music. If it's a powerful piece of music, then I've got my fists up there. I'm ready. It's like, boom. If it's a light little piece, then my hand's almost flying away like a feather. That's the physical part about it. The visual part about it is more of a sense of feeling the direction the music is going, whether it's getting more intense or whether it's loosening up and relaxing a little bit, if we're going from something tense to something more casual and comfortable. How do you make that transition? This is always the thing that I look for in a great conductor, how we make the transitions from style to style, from emotion to emotion. That's usually where orchestras that are not well-disciplined make their mistake. People start falling into holes and feel uncomfortable because it's not a smooth transition. There are a lot of conductors that go from conducting the march really well, and then it goes into a waltz, and they do the waltz really well, but getting from the march to the waltz is the secret. It's a learning process. I always watch conductors and how they get from that point A to point B with their hands and communicate to the players.
You've been telling me lately that you've had a lot of enjoyment and education watching John Williams when you were down in L.A.
John Williams is a phenomenal conductor. He's 83 years old right now. You couldn't tell it by the fact that he's on the podium conducting with such authority. When you have an orchestra as good as the ones that are playing in the studios, it's fun for all of us. I know it's fun for him, and it's fun for us because when he starts conducting and we start following him the way he wants, we're all having a good time. Because those orchestras are so good at following, looking at the music, playing their part, listening to the people directly around them, and even across the symphony, and watching John at the same time. It's really magnificent when it really happens. If you go back and see Star Wars, the latest one, Force Awakens, stick around for the final credits.
I always do.
I always do, too. And it's good because most of the people have left. So there's me and the guy picking up the popcorn off the floor, and I'm just really enjoying listening to this beautiful music. That's probably the best part of the movie, is that they put all the ingredients of what you've heard up to then, this sort of like big finale, and it's beautiful. And The Force Awakens, there was a fugue that John wrote that was so exquisite. I mean, really well written. It was like a concert piece. Just created this ending, which is lovely.
You were able to play with that orchestra?
Yeah. Several sessions of Star Wars. And now, more recently, I've been working on this picture with him called The Big Friendly Giant. It's a Roald Dahl book and a Steven Spielberg production. Totally different sound. Mellow and lyrical and not this harsh trumpets and trombones and percussion, but really lovely string sounds and wonderful flute playing, just almost magical sounding. You talk about visuals. I think all of us, if you hear a combination of certain sounds, it gives you some kind of visual impression. John Williams is very good about using harp and celeste together. And they're sometimes across the room from each other, so they have to be really watching and listening to each other really closely so that they pluck and tap at the very same time. And it's got a sparkly sound to it. So when you listen to it, it has a little bit of gold to it. It's one of those things where you hear that and you go, oh, that's that sparkly gold sound. Or it has a little blue in it. You know what I mean? We feel the colors.
Are you watching the film while you're performing the score?
I'm not supposed to be. I'm supposed to be watching the conductor and the music. But sometimes where I'm sitting, I can just shift a little bit around to the side and I can catch it. However, for these past two movies, they have shown the movie not at all to us. They kept it dark because they don't want anybody putting it on their cell phone and sending it out to YouTube and ruining the moment. Certainly in Star Wars, when Luke comes back at the end, they did not want anybody to see that a month ahead of time. I'm intrigued by what the Big Friendly Giant will be because I haven't really seen any of it. But Spielberg, you know it's going to be something exciting.
In those performances, is he at that point having to be doing it in exact rhythm or time with the visual of the movie, or is that synced at another group of people with another skill?
All of those things. But with John Williams, he can line it up in his brain. He doesn't really need all those timings. He does it with a clock, uses the clock a lot. Most conductors don't use the clock anymore. They don't even know how to use it anymore. There's a lot of click track, so we know that this is the tempo. Pop, 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 pop. Okay, we'll give you four free, and then you start playing. One, two, three, four, boom, we start playing. He knows the movie really well because he wrote the score to the movie. He knows how to get what he wants at any given moment. It's beautiful to watch. It really is something else. I think when you know that he's only got a few more movies left, everybody's more attentive. It's like a real privilege to be in the room with such an artist.
You started out as a player in your life?
Yes.
When did you discover that there was an interest and a skill at being able to conduct?
I started getting interested when I was in high school. I was interested in composition myself. I liked to write music, and I liked to write music for the groups that I was in high school. So I wrote a piece for the band. I wrote a piece for the orchestra. I conducted it. I liked it. I liked the way that it sounded. I liked to hear the sounds all around me. That's why I like playing in the orchestra. I like playing in the viola section because I have the sounds all around me. So I hear the cello section. I hear the flutes. I hear the violins. I hear the percussion, the trumpets and the brass directly behind me. I'm in the middle of all of it. It's like the best seat in the house except standing on the podium. That's a really cool place to be. I like it because I love hearing sound. Sometimes I'm so caught up in the sound, I forget to conduct because I think, oh my God, it's just happening and I should just sit and listen. But that's not my job as the conductor, it's to conduct.
Was it Danny Kaye, I think, who did one of those skits of starting Bolero and then walks off stage to just sort of tell the audience, who needs me anyway, da-da-da-da-da. Obviously, that isn't the case. You're beginning to let us in on a little bit of those subtleties. And, of course, it all starts with what you're even choosing to have an orchestra play.
Exactly. I like to put together programs like Stephen likes to put together a meal, or you like to cook a meal. You think about all ingredients. What's the appetizer going to be? How is that going to whet the appetites of the audience? Is it something that is going to be too heavy to start with? We don't want to fill them up too much on the very first piece. Because then where are we going to go from there? What's next course to come? That's pretty much how I think of programming a concert. And then I also think of who's playing the most people at that moment and how do I use them throughout the concert. So if I have a big orchestra with trombones and percussion and tuba and harps, I'll probably use it throughout the evening and might as well use like orchestrated pieces. If it's a smaller group, like a couple of flutes, a couple of oboes, and we're doing Beethoven symphony or Mozart symphony, then I'll keep it small. I'm thinking of a program that I'm going to come up with for next season for Orchestra Novo in October about just doing a string concert, string orchestra. And it's something I love. I mean, I'm a string player, so I love the sound of a full string sound. Nothing more beautiful to me than that. And there's a lot of great literature written for that group, Baroque music all the way up to contemporary music. And there'll be a little bit of each on that program.
You are listening to Ears on Art, produced at the studios of KCBX Public Radio. Today, we are visiting with Michael Novak, who is the founder and maestro of Orchestra Novo. The orchestra has a performance on May 29th at the Performing Arts Center on the Cal Poly campus.
Speaking of Orchestra Novo, in a nanosecond, it feels like, on May 29th, pretty interesting concert coming up, and it's making use of this crossover discipline type of thing. Would you explain what's going to happen?
The background of this particular project is that a couple of years ago, some of our local friends and music lovers told me they had seen a documentary at the SLO Film Festival, and the movie was called I'm Not a Rock Star. It is a documentary about this girl, Marika Bernacki, who lives in Canada, or did at the time, and it follows her from age 12 into age 20. All those teenage years, what it's like to be learning the piano and studying piano, going through the family dynamics, and then ultimately her travels to Juilliard School of Music in New York and the pressures of what New York City is and the competitive lifestyle and the work as hard as you possibly can all the time. And you're always dealing with somebody that's a little bit more talented. So it's crazy hard. But at the end of the film, Marika says, I really want to do music because I love it. And I want to share it. And I want to make people's lives better because of it. There's a little segment at the very end. There's some artworks that are shown on a screen while she's playing the piano. And these artworks were created by the school where Bobby Joe Hart, the director and filmographer, her daughter goes to school, and it was kind of a project they did together where Marika would play some music, they would draw to it, and then it would finally go on the screen. And I thought, wow, let's do that here. That'd be a lot of fun. And so I spent a whole bunch of time looking for music that would be appropriate, stuff that would be have piano with it and piano and orchestra with it, a choice where it was a more reflective piece of music, a piece by Ravel called Pavane for a Dead Princess. It's a very heartfelt piece of music, finally resolves somehow into a brighter moment. And I thought about which group would be appropriate for this. And it just hit me that the students at the Grizzly Academy here in San Luis Obispo would be the ideal students, because even the title, which we won't tell them, is The Dead Princess, there's implies some kind of grief. You know, we have to work through that grief. It's and those students, as from what I've learned and heard, have some grief in their life. They have some difficulties in their life, as many children do these days. But these students in particular, they're at risk. They're at that point where they might not succeed in their life. And the Grizzly Academy is doing a brilliant job of helping them turn their lives around. It's voluntary. The students say, I want to go here. The state doesn't say, you must go. Or their parents say, don't say that. They say, yes, I'm going to do this to make my life better. And we've seen it in their eyes. When I met those students, I just fell in love with them. So they're going to hear the Ravel Pavane on the piano, and then by the orchestral version as well, because Ravel orchestrated it thinking that there was a broader spectrum of musical colors, tonal colors, and we're going to translate that into visual color with paint. And so those 200 students that are there, I will be having the time of my life watching them create to see this music, hear the music, and see it in their eyes, in their imaginations, and to paint to it. After they finish, we'll photograph them on May 29th at 3 p.m. at the PAC. Marika Bernacki will be here. She will perform live the Pavane for a Dead Princess. The Orchestra Novo Ensemble will perform the Pavane for a Dead Princess in the orchestral version. Now, when we hear the Pavane played on the piano, it's around 5.5 minutes, maybe a little less. When we hear it performed by the orchestra, it's 6.5 minutes, maybe even longer. And I wondered why that was. Then it occurred to me that the piano can't make a crescendo. However, in an orchestra, the French horn takes the first note and just starts crescendoing throughout it. So you can't rush it. You have to give it its time. And that's why the performances have different time spans. I'm really intrigued also to see how these paintings start and then are developed as we go from the piano version to the orchestral version. And the teachers thought it would be really wise for all students to see Marika play the piano and to hear the orchestral version as well. It's sort of, in my imagination, I can make an analogy of maybe it's people drawing stick figures with the piano, and then all of a sudden the orchestra comes in, it's golden locks and red dress and, you know, all of these kinds of wonderful added features.
I am so impressed with what I have learned in the visits that we've made to Grizzly and talking with the head of the program and with the art teachers. I really didn't know too much about what was there. What I've come away with is, yes, these students are in uniform. They're there for 5 months, and it's kind of a cold turkey first month. But at the same time, they seem to have really learned that they're in a place of respecting who's giving them information. They'll give it back, and it's amazing how that works.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to you, they were introduced to some clay. When I went back just the other day to talk to the art teachers, they were like, oh, what a profound effect that had on the students. And there was actually one girl that they said was channeling. It was like she had just been doing this for all her life or maybe past lives. It was so natural for her to just be working with clay, and it was sensational. So they were all impressed. So thank you for that addition.
It was something that I did in class one time and went, wasn't that clever? And this was something that they did. They weren't keeping anything. It was an exploration. It was with, at least in some state, with their eyes closed, so that it was a very tactile experience while listening to music. I was just trying to think of some warm-up kind of activity.
And well, so, it's very interesting because we talked about how many times we should play the music. Should there be long breaks and then bring it in? And they found that while they were doing the clay, they had music playing. And then when they stopped the music, a lot of bodies just stopped, and they stopped the process because the music wasn't going on as well. So the connection of the two things together is quite symmetric in a way. I knew very well a viola player friend of mine, and she was dating a man who worked with clay all the time. And he would do brilliant things while she was playing Bach in the next room. I mean, he would call her up and say, I want to create. Can you come over and play for me? Because I can't do it unless I have that golden sound. I mean, I'm looking for that. And she would come over and play for him for hours. And she loved playing, and he loved her playing. And it was a very creative source for him as well. Art and music together go hand in hand in so many ways.
I think they do, and I think often we're unconscious of what they are. You want to talk about supermarkets?
Supermarkets, oh my goodness. There's nothing worse to me than to be in the frozen peas section and hearing something, just Elton John singing Don't Go Breaking My Heart. I love that music, but not there. Maybe it's just me. I know they've done massive studies that say people will spend more money if they hear music. To me, it's annoying because now I've lost track of why am I in this aisle? Frozen peas. But I'm hearing Don't Go Breaking My Heart, because my ears go to that. It's the same thing if you go to any Italian restaurant anywhere in America. I don't know if it's true in Italy, too. They have to have Pavarotti singing or Andrea Bocelli singing really loud while you're trying to have a conversation. I mean, I love Pavarotti. I love Andrea Bocelli. But at a concert hall, but not, you know, while I'm having some breadsticks and minestrone soup. I mean, I don't think so. I always go to people at the front desk at the Vons or Ralph's or whatever and say, do you mind, really, just can you turn down the music a little bit? And they go, what music?
And you also commented that many of us do hear it and physically start to react to it.
I've watched this a lot. There'll be a piece of music on and it'll have a certain tempo. And everybody in that store is walking to that tempo. Mm-hmm. And I try to not do that. I'll consciously know that the tempo's there and I'll try to step off from what the music is, and it's almost like you can't. That we have to march to that drummer. Quite a few years back now, I had a deal with a very nice, really quality restaurant. One of the owners came up to me and said, would you find some CDs for us to play in our restaurant? I did. I went out shopping and I, you know, bought Baroque music, flute, guitar, whatever, a guitar. Those kinds of things are very settling, and it worked very well.
Throughout history, we've known that artistic works have instigated music, have been the source of the creative spirit, and we see that. I mean, pictures at an exhibition is the obvious one that comes to mind, but a lot of different musical works have been started because of a reaction to a painting, and I think it's interesting that you're kind of taking that backward. You're taking the music to be the motivator for the painting.
I hope so. I'm more than excited about this. In particular, because I think this is an opportunity for these particular students to express themselves non-verbally. So if they have a deep sense of pain or reflection or thoughtfulness or memory, and they can get it out through a color or a combination of colors, if that music spurs their thoughtfulness towards a tranquil sky or a forest, or just the color green or the color blue, or an abstract. I always love abstracts. I'm crazy about abstract painting. Really, it's a feeling that's coming out. It's not, I'm going to paint that tree there. It's like, I'm going to paint my soul here. And you do that all the time. Although you also can paint a plum or a pear. I mean, that's the other skill.
Thinking, Stephen, what you were saying in terms of the art often inspiring music, I realize in my travels, stepping into cathedral after cathedral, and they didn't have boom boxes when they were making those. So, I mean, they were being inspired by faith. Is it safe to say that much of the music that's been written has been in response to what got housed in that place and the magnificent sense of scale?
I don't doubt that for a second. It's really inspiring.
May 29th, we've got visuals being projected, their images going up. There's now 12 to 14 minutes of music is being played. What else is in the concert?
The concert's called A Triumphant Heart. Starting off with a piece by Brahms called Academic Festival Overture, and it just seemed to tie in appropriately because it's the Academy, the Grizzly Academy, and then a beautiful piece by John Williams, speaking of, called Hymn to the Fallen from Saving Private Ryan, with the Vocal Arts Ensemble. They'll be joining us. Particularly poignant because that is Memorial Day weekend. I wanted to tie that into that topic a little bit as well, and the triumphant heart of all the people that have given their lives so that, you know, we can be sitting here painting and playing music and thanking them. And then we'll do the Ravel Pavane, both versions, piano and orchestra. After intermission, the Gershwin Piano Concerto, which is real jazzy. And again, triumphant in the sense that we all know George Gershwin to be the greatest jazzer of that ilk in that time. But his triumph was to make a concerto and to do an opera. Porgy and Bess isn't a musical, it's an opera. And the Concerto in F is not just, you know, a jazzy piano piece. It's a concerto, and there's a full orchestra there. And so in a way, that ties in as well. It's his triumph into the classical scene. Wasn't really well accepted when he first performed it, especially by the critics, the classical music critics. It's like, you know, wrong side of the tracks, fella. But now it's a staple, and people love it, and it's exciting, and I appreciate it more and more every time I hear it. And I know it'll be a great concert with Marika Bernacki.
Well, Michael, we will certainly be giving people information on how to buy tickets for this concert. I know that it's definitely going to be a wonderful and unique experience, and I think the beginning of probably quite a few things to come.
I believe that to be true. I would like to continue this co-creation project, as we call it, for years to come, not only with the Grizzly Academy, but with other sort of folks who are restricted in their abilities, either physically or emotionally or mentally. It's just opening some really big doors right now. The interest and the emotional involvement I've gotten from people who hear about it makes me just feel I'm on the right track. Thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Co-host Krista Hewitt and I have been visiting with the founder and maestro of Orchestra Novo, Michael Novak. As Michael has just been discussing, there are two events coming up that are related to a collaboration between Orchestra Novo and the students of the Grizzly Academy. The first is the showing of the documentary I Am Not a Rock Star, which follows the career of classical pianist Marika Bernacki. The film will be presented on Sunday, May 22nd at the Palm Theater at 4:15 p.m. Bobby Joe Hart, the filmmaker, will be present for questions after the screening. All ticket information is available at orchestranovo.com. A week later is the final performance of the season for Orchestra Novo. The program, titled A Triumphant Heart, featuring the 60 members of Orchestra Novo and the artworks created by the students of the Grizzly Academy. This particular form of collaboration is a first for San Luis Obispo County. With participation of the Vocal Arts Ensemble, the concert takes place on Sunday, May 29th at 3 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center. Tickets may be purchased online through the box office at the Performing Arts Center. And additional information can be found at orchestranovo.com. You have been listening to Ears on Art, a segment of Issues and Ideas produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. I am Stephen DeLuque, and along with co-host Krista Hewitt, we thank our listeners for their continued support. Here's wishing you a very pleasant afternoon.